All right, welcome to the very first Pat Pines podcast. A little bit of a tongue twister. As you may have guessed by now, my name is Pat, and I'm going to be your host for these monthly excursions into the world of craft beer. I'm joined with my friend, my brother in beer, Mark Richards.
Right on, Pat, and I am really excited to be here, and I think this is going to be really fun. I hope everybody enjoys it.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. The goal of this is we're going to come to you once a month. We're going to try and bring in interesting, knowledgeable characters from the Central Ohio beer scene and just drink beer, talk about beer, and share it with you.
We've got Fred Lee and Jonathan Carroll from Actual Brewing Company.
Talking beer, drinking beer. If you want to know about what kind of sour they're going to be coming out of Actual soon, stay tuned. If you'd like to know Fred's secret recipe for chili, that's also coming. And at the end, we've got a list. Every month, we're going to have a list. What's the top five list this month, Mark?
Well, Pat, our top five list this month is what we find are underappreciated local beers. It's definitely an interesting segment at the end of this podcast where our guests share a lot as well. People in Columbus will really find out some beers that they need to get out and try. We sure learn a lot about the making of sours in this episode, and I think our listeners will too. There are a lot of pretty good beer-related events coming up in Columbus.
Exciting things going on in a segment we call Drink Local
and Drink Often. So Smokehouse Brewing has a sour release coming on Thursday, December 3rd at 5 p.m. They'll be featuring a barrel-aged, blended, bottle-conditioned sour.
And sour releases are not a common event in Ohio, but there's another one coming up just 2 days later. On Saturday, December 5th, Actual Brewing is having what they call the Sour Puss Bottle Release Party, where they're going to be releasing Leviton Sour Stout, only 100 bottles available, Tenacity Brett Beer, and Bourbon Barrel Aged Fat Julian. So what's next, Mark?
On Sunday, December 6th, Hoof Hearted has yet another canning release party for their David Lee Roth era Van Halen inspired Everybody Wants Some line of single hop double IPA.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's the debut of the single hop double IPA series. It features what I know for a fact is Trevor's favorite hop, and that's the Nelson Savon New Zealand hop.
Fair enough.
That's going to be awesome.
Doors open at noon.
But you better get there a little bit early if you want to get a place in line, because those events are crazy. All right, I'm going to finish up with the last event on our calendar, and that's 1 week later, which is the Zaptig Ugly Sweater Party. That's going to be on Saturday, December 12th, and Zaptig is going to be releasing Bourbon Barrel Age Bambalam and Mystery of Mysteries, another Barrel Age Sour release, which they call Bourbon Barrel Age Sour, for lack of a better name.
That's an amazing name. That's an amazing name. I think Ain't Talking About Love was already taken.
Yeah, well, it is hard to come up with good beer names. And I do think those guys can craft some pretty special beers. And so it's definitely worth checking out. Very excited to have Fred Lee and Jonathan Carroll from Actual Brewing coming in to talk about a lot of stuff. What's going on at Actual these days?
And welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having us on your inaugural podcast.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, right on. Thanks for coming.
This feels great.
Feels good. Yeah, so really a lot of construction is going on. We have some new tanks to crank out more Photon that we're trying to get hooked up and running as soon as possible.
Yeah, we got four triple batch lager tanks.
Wow.
And okay. You know, it needs four times the cooling and four times the electrical load and all of that. So the projects are complicated. But
what's the capacity of those tanks?
They're 30 hectoliters.
30 hectoliters each, yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all metric. So we do like 10 to 12 hectoliter batches.
Actual is about the science of brewing. And so as a scientist, I've got to say, who wouldn't be metric, right? And you guys are just back from FOBAB, right? The Festival of Barrel Age.
Just back from FOBAB. We brought our sour that we're releasing next Saturday called Tenacity. It's a Brett beer. Really, really an awesome experience, though. There were so many good sours to try. I did not even come close to trying all of them.
I think some of the new hottest sours, Zach was talking about the lagers in gin barrels.
Yeah, there are a lot, not even sours, but just some real nice balanced gin barrel beers that we were pretty excited about.
Okay. Gin barrels. That's interesting. So look out for gin barrel aged beers.
But gin barrel aging is not real common in the world of craft beer. How many have you had aged in gin barrels?
One, I think. Okay. Before Yellow Springs put their saison into a gin barrel down at their tapper, I had that. And that was it. Don't see it very often.
I've never had one. Yeah,
there you get a lot more of the oak and a lot less of the gin.
Okay.
Than you would think. It's really nice, especially for like a lighter bodied beer.
So actually that kind of takes us into one interesting aspect of making sour beers, which is the barrels. Getting the barrels, you know, what barrels do you want? Could you guys talk a little bit about that?
Largely Woodford barrels.
Okay.
We just have a good line on those. They're pretty solid. We use them for bourbon barrel aging at first, and then once they start to just taste mostly like oak and not like bourbon, we'll start to do the sours in them. Leviton, which is another sour that is coming out next week, was done in Taranso wine barrels. Those were Cab Sav, right?
Yeah, it's a Cab Sav barrel, and Taranso is a cooper that deals mostly with French winery barrels.
Okay.
If you think about bourbon barrel, and it's by law, they're a single-use barrel.
Right.
The manufacturing processes are quite different from a winery that is buying a barrel for 40 or 60 years. So when you get a wine barrel, it feels like it's full. The construction is for you know, 40 years of vigorous use, and not vigorous, it just sit most of the time.
Yeah.
But they are built for a long time.
Yeah.
And the Woodford Reserve barrels, which I think are the highest quality that I've used from a whiskey barrel so far, still are not. You can't get a ton of life out of them.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not aging something for many, many years and you cycle the barrels a lot.
Yeah, we're on fourth use of some Woodford barrels, I believe. Mm-hmm. But they start to show wear much faster than the wine barrel.
So it's not as sustainable as getting some real oak barrels made. And I think that I want to transition to having our own oak fleet for the wood barrels and getting some foders. And
now those barrels you're getting in then are made for you. Are you guys the first customer? The first
The Taranso?
Yeah.
From, I cannot afford new Taranso barrels.
Maybe, what does one cost you?
I saw like $1,500 or $1,600.
Wow. Okay.
On the new, they're 10 times more expensive.
Okay. What about, we spoke about gin barrels. Any idea what it would be to get like gin or rum barrels?
We just started looking after Fobab.
Okay.
Not very hard yet.
So the gin barrel owning listeners should send us an email.
That's right. Actual Brewing. They are looking for your barrels. Right. But I guess unlike bourbon barrels, which are, by law only used once, a gin barrel is typically probably used multiple times, I'm guessing.
I think they can use them more. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us a little bit about these beers that are coming out at the Sour Puss release party, because they both sound very interesting to me.
Sure.
Are we going to drink them?
We are going to drink them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should open this fantastic looking Brett beer from Actual.
A little bit of sludge on there.
Man, I thought I would be perfect on. I thought I did get. I did distribute the sludge properly. The lees, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Lees. Yeah, if we're going to get fancy. They're the lees.
Well, all right. So cheers. Prost.
Cheers. That smells delicious.
Really good.
Yeah, the nose is my favorite part of this beer, actually. Sometimes I've let it totally warm up in my hand just sniffing it. That is a blend of two beers that we didn't let attenuate fully, crashed it and racked it off of the Saccharomyces yeast, and then pitched it into Woodford barrels with a purebred culture.
The purebred Brett. And then did you add a fresh wort as well to that, or is it just those two batches?
It was just, since it still had quite a bit of sugar left in it, let it chew through all of that.
Well, typically, and that's the way it would work, you would start the fermentation with the Saccharomyces, and then you come with the Brett later on. So how long was this in the barrel?
Close to a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 10 months.
Very close to a year.
Yeah.
It says on the bottle 10 months. I think when we made the labels, we were like, okay, we're bottling these next week.
And then it might have taken
like 4 weeks.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. It's getting aged right now. While it's sitting in the glass.
I don't make the beer. This is something that Jonathan and those guys
connected a lot of this,
and I'm very proud of you guys. It's really good.
It's exceptional.
The water profile is fantastic.
I'm glad you guys like it.
Delicious water. Very good.
Well, I have to confess that I love lots of different kind of beers, but my very favorite is Brett beers. And it's exciting to start off the podcast with the very first one. It's got that fruitiness, it's got all that, the funky Brett, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, actually, that's one interesting question. Mm-hmm. How do you describe the Brett funkiness? Because people use a lot of words.
Oh,
barnyard,
yeah.
horse blanket, yep. You know.
This one, to me, I get a lot of, like, canned pineapple kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, there is a definitely there. A pineapple-y note to it, for sure. But yet there is kind of a funkiness. What I kind of think of Brett is like fresh, wet hay or something mm-hmm. like that, you know?
A lot of those... I have a lot of really bad words that I use for describing beers. My favorite beer of all is a Brett table beer.
Okay.
Stillwater did a project a long time ago.
Is that the beer table beer?
Or? Yes.
Yes.
And they've done a lot of them, but there was that one.
The very first, 2011 and 2012, the defining characteristics for me, always I drank the water first. And then it was mostly Centennial and Brett. That
okay.
It had a lot more barnyard hay funk, lots of horse blanket.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of those really like interesting and strong.
But pretty pungent kind of flavors. There are different strains of Brett. Mm-hmm. So in this beer, what strain of yeast did you use? Do you remember?
I think this is Zach has really been sort of our barrel aging pioneer. I think in this one is Clausenii and Bruxellensis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And the hops?
It started out as two different beers, just real light, tiny additions. I think Northern Brewer was just a little bit for bittering in both of these.
When we talk about designing a sour beer, if you just drank the beer by itself, it wouldn't be great.
Mm-hmm.
You have to anticipate the changes, and then when you make a beer, it should have X amount of characteristics. Blending beers lets us do two. So let's say you need a beer that has a high mash temp and a low mash temp. Well, you can't, right? A middle mash temp doesn't work.
Right.
So sometimes when you need that, like, high sugar content for the ale side yeah. and bacteria side, and then low sugar content for the ale side or fermentables or whatever, you have to make those kinds of compromises. I don't know what went into this, mm-hmm. but it's always a gamble.
Mm. And these are both higher mash temp than most of our regular production beers, because the Brett will then eat down anything that the sack doesn't
get
to. So
yeah, Brett's... From what I've read, sort of a more tenacious eater. It'll mm-hmm. eat a lot of mm-hmm. things, but it's slow.
Yes.
And so hence the 11 months in a barrel, right?
Yep. It's weird for a long time. You got to be patient. It's tough.
Yeah, from the business side of things, as a newer mm-hmm. brewery, it's challenging to make sours, I guess, in this way, right? The ones that, you know, have to sit in a barrel for a year or 2 years or something
it
like
is
that.
The upfront cost is a little bit of a challenge because it's a batch that you're not going to see a return on for a long time. But we have, since the very beginning, I think we've all really wanted to do sours, so it's really more of a labor of love than, you know, just trying to make a buck. We want to make beer that we like to drink.
If I can say one thing, I never get tired of the smell. I mean, it's
yeah.
it's delicious, but man, when you go back in for the nose in that glass, consistently nailing it the whole way
there. The pineapple, pineapple just is, there's a ton of it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a culture that we've kept going. So this is not the last beer that it's going to make for us.
Cool.
Now, do you have to be aware, or, you know, sometimes brewers don't like to bring Brett into their brewery, right, for the fear that it might get in everything. And so what kind of thoughts have you guys had on that?
We have separate equipment.
Okay.
There's bacteria in the air everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Sure.
All over your body. You're squirting bacteria all over the place as you sit there. If you can't clean your tanks, you can't clean your tanks, right?
Yeah.
If you can't clean your lines, you can't clean your lines. Right, you know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, so it's going to happen.
We're not all living in a bubble, right?
With exactly. Kind of antiseptic bubble. So you have to be able to clean your tanks. And then, yes, there are stories of breweries getting infections that would be cost prohibitive for them to clean out, or that they don't care and they rock it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We keep our equipment separate, and, you know, for the most part, the rooms are separate.
Yeah. I mean, I guess
that's why these are bottle conditioned. They're not. I'm not putting that in my Bright tank. I just can't risk the losing a batch for a little more work.
So I guess the Brett. I mean, all the fermentation. Fermentation is going on in these Woodford Reserve barrels, in the bottles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
in the Terrace barrels.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. So,
and then we have a blending tank dedicated to blending the beer, and it's just for sours. So we'll pump from the wood into that tank and then do all of this sugar mixing and the carbonation adjustments. I don't know, what do these take? 5 weeks to bottle condition?
These are on their 8th week, I believe, and it finally is right. So the Brett takes a little longer in the bottles.
Right.
Okay.
If it was a regular bottle conditioning, I would say 6 weeks would be perfect.
And what, after they listen to the show, are going to want to get it, I'm sure. So how much of it is there? And I know you've got the release party.
Mm-hmm.
Will it, do you think it, what's the supply?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot under 600 bottles of Tenacity. Okay. And then when we get to Leviton, there's only 100 bottles of that.
So people got to pay attention. We've got bottle 100.
We brought you 100 out of 100.
That's awesome.
We do subscribe to continuous improvement at the brewery, so that should be the very best of the batch, technically.
Love it.
Very cool.
Okay, sours.
There we go. All right, so...
So do they have a cool ship at Allegash?
Yeah,
they have a
sweet cool ship. So here's the thing. So the next beer we're going to drink is Cool Ship Resurgium from Allegash. Now, at Allegash, they have a cool ship, but one of the interesting things there, they only use it in like late fall. So they're like, oh, there's only like 1 month out of the year when we feel the yeast here in Maine are appropriate for making this beer.
Really?
Which is kind of weird. I mean, you know, the Lambic brewers, of course, don't brew during the summer.
Yes.
And actually, even Cantillon has said that because of global warming, they got to push their schedule back about a month. Actually, they can't brew now in October. They got to wait till November. And they actually dumped a batch of beer.
That's crazy.
So that's kind of crazy. But Allegash is particularly, I don't know what the main microflora is like.
Cool Ship Resurgium.
A bunch of videos online that Zach and I have, maybe not a bunch, some, where it's like footage of their lab, and they're talking about how they had to dump seven batches out of their foeders, and
okay.
A lot of times they'll say what is the predominant souring bug
okay.
in a lot of these, so that would be interesting to look at.
Well, the nose on this one is definitely funky.
Yeah.
It's really tart in a good way.
It's aromatic, like almost like a blue cheese or something.
Mm,
like a,
right.
And it's the same kind of stink, yeah.
Yeah, you do get that kind of cheesy aroma at times.
Yeah, I get mm-hmm. like an upgraded diaper kind of. It's good. It's very good.
A lot of times,
Fred, you're the best on description.
A lot of times with that specific kind of stinky cheese funk, I think probably a good portion of the souring bacteria is PDO, right?
Pediococcus, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now this one is way less fruity than mm-hmm. you know what mm-hmm. we just
tenacity.
Had. Yeah, than tenacity.
Oh, it's tart. Isn't it?
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like puckering.
Yeah, that is tart.
Puckering sour. It's great.
Mm, that's kind of good. I like the oak flavor.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a sour.
That's like a lemon head kind of, you know, like it, I mean
a warhead.
Warhead, yeah.
Lemon heads.
Yeah. Sorry, you know.
No, I don't know. Lemon heads are kind of like candy though, right?
I think
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so are warheads.
They're all candy, but anyway, some are more sour than the other. I think sometimes when you get when things get really sour, I almost get like a metallic kind of taste to it. I don't know if other people
it can
pick
do
up
that.
On.
Our sour mash beer, Curiosus, tastes like metal for a week, and then you got to age it to mellow it out.
Oh yeah, the sour mash beer. Yeah, Curiosus takes a while to get it out.
Okay,
I like to be on the edge of that a lot. Mineral water, right? I want it to be minerally, but not metal. So that's a really fine line.
It is,
and it's hard to minerals may go or in or out depending on the carbon and the charcoal profile in the barrels and who knows,
sure.
Right?
Like sure, they could
magic
precipitate
humidity
they could,
problems.
They could do different things.
I have the glass 5 inches from my nose. I can smell tartness. Like it's like coming in, like it's wafting right out at you.
Now, if we diverge into a sciencey thing, which is as a chemist and actual is all about science.
Pat's pints too.
Let's talk about the acids in a sour beer. I mean, mostly lactic acid, right? But also you can get acetic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the, do you guys know, what would be like the mix? Is there a certain mix you tend to shoot for? Or do you have any idea what the ratio of lactic to acetic acid is? Now, you don't want too much acetic acid, right? Because then it's too, that's not good, I don't think.
Yeah,
right.
That's the vinegar smell.
Yeah, yeah, that's
the There's vinegar. A bunch. There are actually a bunch.
There are a lot of acids.
Parenthoic. Something I don't even
know. Lots of organic, lots of carboxylic acids, different benzoic acids, and things like that. Right.
Yeah, the acetobacter will do that sort of vinegar thing, and I really like the Flanders reds, the Flemish reds that edge more along that, like the Jacobin and the Duchess.
Yeah. With a bit more acetic vinegar. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think in that style, it's really nice. It doesn't work everywhere though.
Acetic acid has a strong correlation with acetone later on, and ethanol and ethanoic acid, and there's a cycle of oxidization of acetic acid, acetaldehyde, I think, and then straight up acetone.
Yeah.
And acetone, you guys know.
No, not good. Yeah. Nail polish remover.
Yeah. There are beers with acetone, parts per million of acetone in them from being aged in oak with the oxygen and the acetic acid. And it happens. And you doesn't necessarily have to come from this, like a mess up either. It can just be you aged it too long with that oxygen barrier.
Well, I mean, there is kind of an oxidative process
in chemistry, and I'm trying to think. I think so. If you start with an ester, then you can go to ketone and aldehyde, carboxylic acid. Those are all different steps the stages. The oxidative process. Yeah. Right? Eventually, CO2. That's the end point.
Acetone.
As much as you could oxidize any organic molecule, CO2 would be the end point.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but there's all these intermediate steps, and you know, one of the things I know about spirits, and I don't know a lot about spirits, is that if there's aldehydes in here, that's not good. That's what gives you the. That's part of what gives you the hangover. That and the ethanol,
right?
Right. You know.
I think aldehyde is made in the liver too, as breakdown of ethanol.
I think you're right.
That's the part that gives you the hangover.
Yeah. So, but it doesn't help if it's already in.
That's even worse. Right. So Allagash has this cool ship. They have a cool ship?
Yeah, they do have a cool ship.
And they can only use it twice a year, or in the winter.
That's what they choose to use it, in the late fall.
Mm-hmm. I think they built a building for it.
It's in a separate building. Yeah. It's in a separate building.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. We just acquired Ohio Bull Sandstone. Ohio Bull Sandstone comes from Ohio. One of the oldest businesses in Ohio has given us some stone to play with to make a Yorkshire square.
Like Sam Smith's use. Don't they use the Yorkshire, don't they ferment?
I think they still do. Yes, yeah. I think they still do. So we're going to make an open fermenter out of sandstone. And we're going to open ferment English-style ales with this sandstone tank. We've got a pilot in the works right now. And then we've got a bunch of that stone in the waiting. So Lang Stone, they're a neighbor of ours. The business is right down the street from us, a couple of doors down.
Yeah, I think very excited about that. I mean, getting to see him last week when I was hanging out, pretty cool. It is a real thing, and it's in the house. So I think that is pretty exciting.
I'm excited.
Lot of people say they're trying to replicate fermentation in Yorkshire stone. So that's pretty impressive just in and of itself.
No, I want to make an all-Ohio beer, including the tank and the yeast.
Okay.
We'll have to get the ale yeast from some bees or something.
What's the hardest part? What's the hardest link in that? The weakest link in making everything from Ohio stuff?
Barley is going to be the hardest part.
Yeah, I think so. Right.
Barley.
Do they not grow barley in Ohio? Or they just don't malt it?
I believe the maltsters in Ohio are high nitrogen. So free available nitrogen is one of the components in barley that distillers prefer to be high and brewers want it to be low.
Oh, okay.
And I think all of the barley in Ohio right now is of high free available nitrogen.
I've heard some murmurs of some new kind of up-and-coming maltsters in Ohio that are trying to start doing that here again, but so far I haven't.
So another call to maltsters. So the gin barrel owners and the maltsters.
Come on, step
it
up.
If you're an Ohio maltster, send us your contact information.
Yeah, as far as I know, though, I think that'll be the hardest thing to come across.
Yep. And then we need a mason to put the stone together for us, because that's a real skill, actually.
Yeah.
It's not like gluing Legos together, sadly. Yeah, a cool ship is awesome. I'd love to have one. They have a, what's the Belgian? It's the Cantillon, right? Is the one that's online? Man, that thing is beautiful. It's a huge copper sheet, and it's up in the rafters.
You were just there 2 months ago. Yeah, and it's amazing. That cool ship goes through. It's like in the attic. Everything happens the opposite of gravity there. So everything's pumped up a floor. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, the bottom floor has the
hot liquor and the mash and all that.
And then it goes up a level, get the boil kettle and stuff, and then pumps up again. And then when it goes across that cool ship, they have the the wood with the levers in it. Mm-hmm. And they can open that as much as they want to bring in as much cooling as necessary.
That's crazy.
You know, they're very particular about not having things clean. In a lambic brewery,
naturally,
you don't kill spiders because it needs to sit around for a long time.
Yep.
And the spiders keep
the fruit flies
out.
Flies
right. Yes. Down. Yeah. Because there's a lot of things to be drawn in. Yeah. Especially things that
spider worshippers.
So that's, we were talking about hops.
The aging
of the hops.
So make them yellow and cheesy. Like,
yeah. I mean, there's bales of Hallertauer up there.
Just cheesing out.
Just sitting up in the hot attic. It was clean there. You don't touch cobwebs.
I'd rock cobwebs. That's cool. It's a little goth, but
All right, that was good.
We should drink another beer.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think, well, moving on in our tour of sours, we've got beer that Jonathan and Fred brought, which is New Glarus Wisconsin Belgian Red. So tell us a little bit about this beer, because it's pretty amazing.
I really only had it once, and all I know is that it totally confuses me how they age this in oak vats with all those cherries. And
how do they get it so sweet and cherry?
That's what I'm saying.
This is like when you put your nose in there, it's like full-on cherry pie.
Yeah.
A pound of cherries per bottle.
And I think a lot of the sort of tartness in this must just come from the cherries, right?
Mm-hmm. Over a pound.
Some can, yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. No, it's not particularly tart, is it? But it's...
Because it should be like a pre-existing lambic, already fermented, and then they pack the cherries in. And actually, it's a ton. Like, it's a lot.
It says over a pound per bottle.
That's expensive.
It's really expensive. Pound of cherries.
But it's like a thing. World champion, says so around the label.
Obviously, it's a creek at some level, but on the other hand, not as sour as a Belgian creek.
And not as Belgian-y.
No.
It's a very fruit-forward beer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fruit is insane.
Actually, I've got a couple of bottles of New Glarus that I picked up a while ago at home. One is a strawberry rhubarb.
Mira's favorite.
Mira doesn't drink.
But she loves that beer.
Yeah, she will drink that all day.
What's the alcohol percentage?
It's very low, I think. I think it's under 5.
I have this recipe that I got out of my Draft magazine, and I make it every year when I make the cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving. So, and it's on the blog.
George made that verbatim, too.
It is awesome.
I tried some this morning.
You just take cranberries, and then you add... I use Lindeman's Frambois, but you could use a creek. You could use anything, and then you add, you know, basically you just boil down the cranberries. You add brown sugar, the sour fruity beer, and cranberries. It's awesome.
Nice. There are some fantastic creeks out there.
One that you can get around here that we had at Phobab, the Rivertown Creek, is really, really nice.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, nice. I haven't tried that one.
I like Rivertown a lot.
Their sours are very solid, very good.
Yeah, they are. And even talking about that, because we were thinking earlier, like, when you think about Ohio and sour beers, there's more than one thing going on in December, sours related, you guys are included in that list. And, when I think about sour beers in Ohio, Rivertown is about the only thing that, comes into my mind.
Jackie O's makes some. But on the other hand, pretty limited, not that easy to get your hands on one of those.
Yeah, you got to go down.
You got to go down there. Yeah,
yeah.
I know somebody.
Yes, guy.
Yeah, it helps. What's your favorite Jackie O's sour?
For Craft Brewery Week this year, they did a bunch of fruit versions of their Berliner, and they were all great.
All of those Berliner Weisses we had during Craft Beer Week were phenomenal.
Okay,
what else did we have? We had that Berliner Weiss is not sour mashed. It was soured in a tank or a barrel, right?
They have a bunch of little tanks, and they do like a Solera style, like you would with a barrel.
Okay,
but Soleras are stings.
That's the way to do sours.
Okay.
Moving them
through, you know, kind of like continuous kind of
process. What else? We had, what was that black stout or that sour stout that he got from, that Zach brought? Pat, I will have to do some homework and get back to you on the best Jackie O's sours. There are a lot.
What kills you is there's so many beer names, and trying to retain all these beer names. Just not even possible anyway.
We do this thing every once in a while where we drink, you know, wild ales on Wednesdays.
On a Wednesday.
Wild Wednesday.
And we'll just like get together, like 4, 5, 6 of us. And sometimes, multiple people bring sours. And sometimes Pat will have a lineup. Most recently, Chris at his house has got some Clintonville
food. Yeah, we have a friend who homebrews sours, who lives north of here about a mile or so.
He's got some that have been going for a while.
Yeah.
So that was good to go over and try his. But Luke brought like two exceptional ones that he had been holding on to from Jackie O's for a while.
If you're going to make sours, there's a couple different ways to do it, right? I mean, you could do, we talked about sour mashing, or you could do a kettle sour, or you could do it like the full-on way, like the beers we're drinking tonight, which is a barrel sour. Maybe talk about those different approaches to making sours. I mean, some take a lot longer than others, right?
Sure. Our Berliner Weiss is just sour mash, and it really only takes about an extra half a day.
Okay.
So it is sour mash in the mash tun. We pitch lacto in there, cover it up, trickle CO2 in to keep it anaerobic in there, because we're we don't want to make vinegar. Cover it up and go home. It kind of feels like leaving your baby on the street overnight or something. Okay. But
really, they just leave it.
Just leave it.
Now, when you say cover it up in what way?
Blankets. We like close the lid on the mash tun, put a bunch of blankets over it, and make sure that the temperature. We ended up not losing more than a degree overnight.
So it's really fun. You get to brew in the morning, and then instead of finishing your brew day,
you just go home.
You just go home.
Okay.
Or we end up drinking and playing Mario Kart all day.
Right.
And then in the morning, you have the other half of your brew day to do. Okay. And hopefully the lacto levels are high. That is the flavor of sauerkraut. And it doesn't have many layers of sourness. But the pH is good and low. And there are you can fake pH with just acidulated malt.
Yeah.
You don't have to use bacteria. You could, or add vitamin C to it. Citric acid.
Yeah, I mean, the taste of sour is just it's just a pH sensor basically on your tongue. Just the sensation of sour.
Yeah, I think so. And then a lot of people, a sour Brettanomyces in your beer, or lacto, or PDO, or E. coli, will sour a beer. They'll spoil it. But I think when it comes to Brett, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's more tart or a lower pH either.
Right.
It just has that funk.
Right.
And it still counts as a sour beer, but it may not still be as tart.
The Leviton.
Ooh, sour stout.
So now we move on to the piece de resistance, the Leviton sour stout, bottle 100 out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
This could be, we're some of the first people in the world to drink this.
Is that a fair statement? That is definitely true.
All right, cheers.
Try this beer.
Actually, when I was at the land grant anniversary party, I was talking to Zach about this, and he was telling me about how there was times when this beer just about went down the drain. There were a lot of people saying, we should dump this, but tell us a little bit about the evolution of this beer.
The first time I put Julian into, we had the Terenceau barrel.
Okay.
I scored a few of them on eBay, and they were steel, and I bought them, and they showed up, and I didn't know what to do. So we were brewing Fat Julian that day, and I put Fat Julian in those barrels. I was like, I'm just going to forget about this. Many months go by, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Zach joins in, like, December of last year.
Would have been...
2 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been October 2013.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably a year old at this point, and Zach comes on board, and it went bad or something. It was
okay.
I think it wasn't kept up with. So when you're barrel aging, you want to keep them topped up as some of it evaporates or the wood soaks up some of it or whatever, so you get less oxygen in the barrel.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think probably
so. One of them dried out, and one of them stayed okay.
Right.
Okay.
And sobbing tears as I'm dumping a barrel of beer down the drain.
Yeah, that's been a year in the making, right?
Because I think at the time we made that was as much beer as we could make at the time, right?
Yeah, we were running on a 100-liter system.
Okay.
A little kid stuff, you know, years ago. Two or three years ago. And it doesn't matter. Zach took it under his wing, and we filled him up very shortly after, and he kept on it and started doing it. And then I would taste him like, this isn't working.
Now, the base beer here is Fat Julian.
Correct.
Is that right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And our Fat Julian recipe now is a lot different than it was on my stove.
Okay.
And it's a lot higher alcohol by volume. Right about then, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been beating on it like a hawk.
Okay. Right?
Like, all of us get away from the barrels. And the little wine glass we thief out. And, you know, it's flat and warm right out of the oak.
Yeah.
But you can sort of tell if it's going to be delicious or not. I was like, no, it's not. It's no good. Let's dump it again. Scratch this barrel thing. These French oak barrels are no good. Whiskey barrels only. And I was convinced.
Yeah.
So Zach had the perseverance to fight us off.
Okay.
He knew it was going to be ready.
Because I guess you have a limited amount of barrel capacity, right?
And so right.
Yeah. Okay.
100 bottles is what we got.
Okay.
And then...
now only 99, though.
Cheers. 99 beers in the cooler. On December 5th, Sourpuss, you'll be able to come to our brewery and get some of this.
All right, yes. Cheers. That's an all-day thing, right? What time do you open? Because people might want to say, hey, I don't want to miss this.
Yeah, okay. 10 a.m. until we'll go all night.
Okay.
It. So if you're the first in line at the door on Saturday at 10 a.m., you'll get bottle number one.
Awesome. Yeah, that's...
Bottle one out of 100. You won't get 100.
Yeah. We're doing that for the good of the Columbus beer community. Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome. It is delicious.
Mm. Now this has got it's got a lot going on. I mean, there's a complex beer.
This was a culture that Zach worked on, and I'm not even totally familiar with the source. Some wild stuff going on.
The bitterness is still really present too.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
There's also a bit of sort of dark fruit
profile
there.
Dark fruit.
Yeah.
I even get coffee and like dark.
And also
dark chocolate or something. bitter chocolate.
Tart, but it's not, I mean, it's not as tart as that Allagash one we were having a minute ago, but because the malts, of course, help with that. But
I'm always a sucker for like organic chocolate aisle, dark chocolate with fruit, and this has a lot of that going on. Like, you got a dark chocolate, like orange and cranberry.
Yeah. It's just under 12%.
Okay. Yes, of course.
11.8%.
Like is a lot of the great beers in Ohio.
Yeah, we put on the label 11.8 because that's what it is.
Yep. Now, what did it taste like, you know, halfway through? Like, there was that one point where it was not looking like it was going to make it.
It's very good when it goes in because it's Julian.
Which and is then, a great beer.
Yeah,
care.
love it.
And these guys have improved Julian a lot more than when I was making it, you know, in my house. Thank God, right?
It is a super beer right now, I've got to say.
So it was like really good beer with this sort of like oaky oak and the charcoal and stuff on it. It's also red wine in there. And they don't mix. Right? The flavors don't work together in the early stages. They're very distinct.
It's just kind of like contrasting, kind of conflicting flavors maybe in a way.
More like if you don't let your guacamole sit. You know what I mean?
Actually, I don't think I do know what you mean. But although that brings me into an interesting story. That's a complete aside. One time, many years ago, when I was in college, I was making guacamole, and I thought, you know, it would be good if I added tequila to this guacamole because they're both Mexican, right? No, that doesn't work at all. Actually, that
ruins both things.
It ruins both things. Yeah,
that's not going to be on the podcast. By the way, we're talking about trimming fat.
That is not going to be
okay.
So it's sort of like you make your chili and then you put it in the fridge and then the next day it's a lot better.
Yeah.
Like the ingredients.
There's some rounding out and
There's like a. There's a word for this, I'm sure, and the Japanese or the Germans have come up with it, and it's probably very good.
It's a great word, you're right. There's probably
a great word for this, but it does tend to evolve and mellow out and become a greater sum of its constituents or whatever.
Porter's might go to chili beer now, by the way, just speaking of chili. I'm probably going to make some crock pot chili. Porter is like it.
Okay. Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Because it gives it a little bit of that mole, you know, because of the chocolatey notes from the porter. Like, once it cooks, it just makes it right. It does. It's like, and then people think, oh, man, does this have chocolate in it? No, it actually
is. Do you want to hear my secret chili?
Oh, let's hear it.
My secret chili ingredient.
I love chili stuff, buddy.
Okay, this is the best secret ingredient for chili.
Yeah.
You brown the meat first, right?
Of course.
Okay. So, when you're browning your meat, use bacon fat. And that doesn't make it amazing.
Fattier. Yeah. Okay.
Because you're going to drain it off. But it does something that when right as your chili, right before it starts to boil, you know, it's like hot and but not boiling yet.
Yeah.
Put a piece of raw bacon in on the top and float it right on there.
Okay.
And then the two, it'll make it like, it'll trigger some sort of unnatural beast mode in your body to eat the chili.
There you go.
Okay.
There's my tip.
Okay.
Chili
that's a pretty good tip.
Yeah. That raw slice of bacon on the top is weird.
Now, I have a couple times made chili from the Elevator Ghost Scorpion lager. You know,
I have a bottle of that.
And that's, you know what?
Best use for it.
You brought that over one time.
Yeah. And in fact, you don't have to add any other spice to that
Stevens,
beer.
I think Dick Stevens would agree with you.
I think so. I think he told us that.
Yeah. It's the best use for that beer is to cook with it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
He just wants to make the hottest beer. He knows that. He's like, I just want it to be the hottest beer you can buy. The hottest beer in the U.S. Like,
that's your goal. Nailed it.
I think he's got it. Yeah.
Did a good job.
We are fortunate. Do you know the K. Johns guy?
I don't think so.
I think he's a professor at OSU. I think he's a food science professor at OSU.
Okay.
He owns, I don't know this. This could be totally bullshit. Yeah. He owns the K. Johns company here in Columbus. Okay. And they specialize in hot food business. And he makes all his hot sauces and extracts and hot peppers. And
so is that where Dick gets the... Or is that where
he calls him on the phone and the dude brings over a bucket with like radioactive logo on the front. And like, don't open this bucket. Give me $6,000 and then he leaves.
Yeah.
I think he puts a couple of drops in each tank and that's it.
Wow. It's so hot.
It's so hot.
Oh, it is.
So hot.
Yeah, I mean, just one or two drinks and it's like... Okay, I cannot drink anymore.
I can't go beyond. It's each bottle is like hot sauce.
Yeah, it is literally.
There are videos of dudes drinking it, and they're funny.
Yeah. I believe it. Yeah, but I mean, in a chili, it's good for chili. I mean, it makes a really spicy chili. I just one 12-ounce
bottle. The whole bottle?
I used the whole bottle for a...
It was,
you know, like a 5-quart.
Yeah, it was hot.
It's edible.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see an insane beer Pabst Pints.
We should. Yeah, okay. We should do that. We should. Well, that would be on it, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I want to make a tomato beer.
Okay.
I've never had a tomato beer for a long time.
I want to make a tomato beer for a long time.
What would it be like?
Tomatoes in the mash done.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, tomato juice and beer goes well together.
I don't know, but I think it could.
I mean, it's a thing that people do, right?
Clamato?
So we thought it would be fun to do a list every episode, and for the first one, we thought, hey, what about great beers in Central Ohio that people sort of don't talk about, right? So it's kind of underappreciated. These are things that we've had that we think, you know, other people ought to try.
Do you have a list?
I have a
list.
We do.
We both made a list. You guys are on my list, and I think Photon. I think a lot of people know Photon, but because it's underappreciated style.
My number five sort of underappreciated beer, I'm going to say the North High Milk Stout, actually, because yes. I think that Milk Stout stands up against Left Hand, against a lot of really great Milk
Stout.
It's
very good. In style.
Yeah, within that style guideline. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic Milk Stout.
Yeah, Mr. Owl. I don't know why. That one just calls out to me.
I put Mr. Owl on my list.
It's complex. It's good. It's just like, it's one of those beers that you like cold. It's one of those beers you like when you left it sitting
there.
Do you
have one?
Yeah.
Too long.
I don't know how underappreciated it is, but I don't hear people talk about it a lot. The barley is Scottish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really nice. Yeah, that's a good call.
And that's a cool process that they go through.
Oh, yeah.
The direct fire kettle.
Very
interesting. Yeah, the scorching via the caramelization, which is really unusual.
I think it may just be underappreciated.
They scorch before
they scorch their first runnings to get the color. So I think, if anything, the process is underappreciated.
I would agree. That's a good call.
That's a fascinating beer, actually. Just the way it's made.
Right
on. I think Elevator Mogabe is underappreciated, but it's won a medal.
But it is.
I'm gonna cry bullshit on that because it is.
That's right. It is actually pretty. So I take it off my list.
Now. There you go.
We'll
come back to you.
Yeah, I have another one. All right.
The number four on my list is actually also a Barley's beer, one that I think just was reintroduced this year. The Ulysses Imperial Red. I don't know if you've tried that, but that was, you know, they had a red ale that they made a long time ago, and so they rebooted it. Delicious.
Yeah,
it
had a cask condition version, I think, recently.
Awesome.
All right.
Back. Wolf's Ridge, Looking Ralph. I mean, I love smoked beers are hard to pull off, and you can immediately hate most of them, most people. And that one is just like one. It's drinkable, very good, and actually recently tried to convert somebody that hates all smoked beers. I didn't convert them, but at least they said it wasn't
I hate all smoked beers.
Now, what do you think of Buchenroth?
I haven't had it because I won't order them.
All right.
I'll be there Sunday. Yeah. I'll go there Sunday. We'll have some beer. My mom gave me $60 for Thanksgiving.
Look at that.
Shit, Mom, thanks. You just bought me brunch on Sunday.
Perfect.
But I think Pixelated Sun by Sideswipe.
Yes, that is a
very good beer.
Actually, good call, Fred. I mean, that should be on my list.
Pixelated Sun is a hit.
Yeah.
That is a good beer.
So I'm going to throw one in the mix. I don't know. Maybe not everyone has tried. It's the Belgian Golden Strong they make at Stas. And it's called Golden Delicious. And it is fantastic.
I have had that one.
Yeah, I think anyway. I love that beer.
I've never been there. I'm a dick.
it's funny.
It is a Delaware, Brad. It's a bit of a drive.
So I'll just go ahead and resonate with Stas and their quad.
Mm,
yeah. It's like, and almost because who the hell is making a quad? But they nail the style and it's pretty darn drinkable. And quads are kind of hard for me just because... Cloying, you know, some of them
can be they're very bad. Sweet, they can be very
so
bad.
They can intense. Be very bad. Yeah, that's a style you can totally.
And they have a very
I usually avoid them because I'm worried that they're going to be so bad.
For a mom and pops, just making a small amount for their taproom guests, they're nailing quite a few styles.
Their brew system is a half barrel, but they brew one keg at a time.
Yeah.
And they normally have like 12 beers on tap. That's sort of that. I don't know. Something impressive. To be said for that.
Okay, so I have a beer from Columbus Brewing Company that I think is underrated.
Mm.
I was in Bob's Bar one night, and you know the selection is always stellar. And they had Fatulian on draft. And I make it a custom, like a habit, to only buy actual beers if it's on draft at the place I'm at. But I ordered a Lucy.
Okay, the Belgian.
Belgian IPA is a beer. We started a Belgian IPA back in the day. It's called Apocalypse.
Apocalypse. Oh, right.
We never like really made it anywhere other than the tap room.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was way before me. I think it was maybe a year before.
It was terrible.
Okay.
Lucy is what I imagined when I tried to make Apocalypse. Not only was Lucy, like, just that night. I mean, I've had it other times and since then it's the same, but that night I had it, it was an experience that. It was fantastic. Super underrated.
Yeah. And people don't think about that beer when they think about Columbus Brewing Company, right?
Right. Because yeah. they have so much gold. Yeah.
But no, Lucy, I think, is honestly from Belgian IPAs that I've had from all over the country. I think that's really maybe the most successful attempt that I've had.
It made me feel like a home brewer again. But it made me feel like I've got a lot to learn about how to make beer.
That's inspiring, you know. Yeah.
We drank that New Glarus, and that's the same. Like, how the hell do they
same
do
thing?
This?
I'm totally stumped. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
How do you make such a beer?
Actually, my number two beer is a Wolf's Ridge beer, and I like Wolf's Ridge a lot, and there's a lot I could have picked, but I picked Pie. They're pumpkin ale, and I'm going to tell you, I don't like pumpkin beers.
No. Nope.
I'm not a big fan of them. You know, I went down there, I'm like, all right, got to try it, and it's seriously good. I mean, it has got like the pumpkin pie taste going on, but not cloying. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, it's like 9.5%. You don't taste any alcohol. Whoa. I mean, and yeah. You know, there's a bit of spice in the palate, but
for alcohol alone, it is.
And you know,
so there's two beers. I have to order this smoked beer, and then I have to order that pumpkin pie beer.
They take the pumpkin, so it's fresh harvested pumpkins. They roast it in the kitchen. They put that, you know, in the beer. As much as pumpkin beers are sort of a gimmick and they're normally shitty, that totally changed my opinion of pumpkin beers.
Wow. Best pumpkin beer ever.
There it is. It is the best. It's the best one I've ever had.
I guess we know what we're doing this weekend. Yeah.
There was some left a week ago.
My number one of all of the underrated beers, and I told you guys about this at Broke Bodega when we were drinking there that night, is Wolf's Ridge, and it's Clear Sky Day.
Vanilla is...
That's like coffee. One of my top five favorite Columbus beers, I think.
It's Clear Sky Day.
Yeah, it is.
Every Sunday I do.
And we went a couple weeks ago to they had a coffee beer pairing event.
Lineage Grisette. I really enjoy that beer. New on the scene here in the neighborhood. That's one that just...
That's a good one.
It's just a delicious beer.
And that's probably a kettle sour. How do you guys know how they make it?
I don't know.
It's nice and clean. Yes.
It's nice.
Yeah. My last pick is a beer that I absolutely love. I think it's one of the best of this style that's made anywhere. And that it's just kind of a one-off. It's a collaboration beer. Totes Leotes. The Black IPA collaboration between Land Grant and Hoof Hearted for the Studio 35 beer tasting.
I haven't had it.
Well, the good news is that it's on tap at the Land Grant.
Yeah, we got about five more kegs, so get down.
But if people haven't had that, you got to go down and try it.
So the most underrated beers in Columbus, this should go on your website or something.
You can feel free to send us. You guys could collectively put together and say, here's the actual list of most underrated beers in Columbus.
Yeah, I think it would be good to have a list where people... Everybody always has an opinion on lists.
You know, we've come to the end of the very first Pat's Pints podcast. I want to say thanks to Fred and Jonathan for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for sharing these amazing beers with us.
I'm glad you guys liked them.
People of Columbus, December 5th, right?
December 5th, 10 a.m.
You've got to get out there. Do not miss your chance to get these beers.
We have two food trucks, and the first person in line at 10 a.m. is going to get bottle number one out of 99.
That's right. Yeah. And you probably have to show up before 10 a.m., I'm just saying.
I had to fight tooth and nail to bring this.
Hey, we appreciate it so much. We appreciate it so much.
It's a good fight.
Yeah.
Come back again next month.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. And thanks, guys, for coming out. Great to have you here.
See you guys.